You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. California is the most populated state in the country and one of the most diverse places to live and work. But beneath our overall diversity lies the reality that many of the state's most common jobs are deeply divided by gender, race, and ethnicity. This occupational segregation causes gaps in pay and limits opportunities for many workers. Today, we're speaking with Tess Thorman, a researcher at the Public Policy Institute of California. She's been studying these trends and what they mean for the future of California's workforce. Tess, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me today.
When we look at California's workforce overall, it is pretty diverse. I know you've been looking at this stuff pretty deep, but can we pull back and can you give us a big picture view of what that diversity looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. So California's workforce, like the state's population, is very diverse. It's predominantly Latino or white. So about 40% of workers are Latino, about a third are white. The remaining quarter are Asian Pacific Islander at about 18%, Black at about 5%, or another race ethnicity at about 5%. And that kind of reflects shifts in the state's overall demography. So we project that over time, you know, more of the workforce will be Latino as younger workers, as younger people in California are more predominantly Latino and older Californians are more predominantly white. Nearly half of workers are women. And that's, you know, there was a large increase in the share of women in the workforce between the 1960s and 1980s. But since then, it's been kind of mid 40% of workers. About a third of workers are immigrants, were born outside the U.S., and about 4 in 10 workers in California have a 4-year college degree or more.
So many of us recognize some of the major demographic shifts, you know, the growing Latino population. I'm curious, were you surprised by any of the data you found? Anything jump out at you?
Yeah, well, when we look at occupations, it's really surprising given how diverse the workforce is that so many jobs in California are done primarily by people from similar demographic backgrounds, or that so many workers doing one type of job would have the same demographic background given their share of the workforce overall. And that's where we get to occupational segregation.
So what is that? And why is occupational segregation concerning?
Yeah, so occupational segregation is this term for when we see that jobs are primarily done by people from the similar background or that their workers are overrepresented relative to what we'd expect. A good example of this could be, you know, 93% of executive secretaries and executive administrative assistants are women. And maybe you don't see that in a specific business, maybe within the tech industry, because there are not so many people doing that one job, but you're looking at all people across the state who do that executive secretary or executive administrative assistant job. You know, this kind of overrepresentation does also happen at the kind of sector level, which is more about the type of work that your company does than the type of tasks that individual workers do. So just as a kind of a side example, 77% of workers in agricultural sector jobs in California are Latino compared to 40% of all workers. 9% of people in the transportation industry are Black compared to 5% of all workers being Black. But here we're really focused on the specific jobs that individuals are doing. Where it's problematic, where it's concerning, is where it's connected to wage disparities. And in fact, occupational segregation does play this role in wage disparities. We see that overall, workers who are Latino, Black, another race ethnicity, immigrants, who are women, earn lower wages in California. And part of it is because they're overrepresented in lower paying jobs and they're underrepresented in higher paying jobs. So research suggests that historically, the demographic makeup of who does a job has been a driving factor in how much that occupation pays. So for example, jobs that primarily employed men were paying higher, jobs that primarily employed women were paying lower wages because of those demographic differences. And that's potentially a declining trend now, according to some research. But overall, I would just say that it really suggests that Californians are facing barriers in the labor market, and we would probably see more diversity in occupations if everybody had access to their careers of choice. They had the skills, the training, the resources to move up the career ladders. And so we do research in this area, in part because of how much Californians care about that economic mobility, and because it's important to understand that occupational segregation plays a role in economic mobility, get a sense of its dimensions, and as we think about ways to ensure that workers are able to see growth in their careers and in their economic circumstances.
So let's talk about these barriers then. Why are some jobs over-concentrated in certain demographics? And I mean, what do you chalk this up to? You know, it's a very complex question, right? There's individual choices, systemic, historical issues, cultural, even discriminatory activity going on. What have you found?
Absolutely. There is a real multitude of factors behind occupational segregation. And I kind of break them down into two pieces, where one part of this is about choosing a career in context of our culture. So people generally find out about what they're drawn to with a lot of influence from what they see around them. So part of that is getting ideas about what would be a good fit for you with information about what your friends do and what your family does. The other piece is about not being able to pursue a career that you want because of barriers that crop up along the way. And neither one of those things is exclusively reflecting the history in the US of race and gender-based discrimination, but both of those things are influenced by that. And that includes reflecting or kind of replicating existing disparities. One, you know, for example, education is a really key piece of access to higher paying jobs in California, but the state has major disparities in four-year degree completion, you know, reflecting kind of compounding disparities all along that pathway to earning the four-year degree. So like only 18% of Latino and 35% of Black workers hold a four-year degree or more, compared with more than 50% of White and Asian Pacific Islander workers holding at least a four-year degree. And that translates pretty directly into seeing Latino Californians, for example, making up a small share of workers in jobs that typically require a four-year degree, and then being overrepresented among jobs that don't typically require completing a bachelor's degree. And that's all before we get into the labor market, where there are still kind of disparate opportunities and barriers that people face, and the long reach of things like having differential family resources and social supports, things that might make it easier or harder to invest in starting a business or take some time off to change your career. So there's a real complex net of things that contribute to occupational segregation, which means there's not like a single thread you could pull to kind of unravel this particular issue.
So there's a moral push for a more equitable society. I mean, a lot of us just know and understand it's the right thing to do is helping people with new opportunities. But what are the other benefits to a diverse workforce that, you know, people may not realize?
Well, I think that kind of broadly speaking, we want people to be able to pursue careers that speak to them and kind of achieve what they want for their lives. This is just a piece of economic mobility that's really important to Californians, that you be able to, you know, see your circumstances improve over the course of your career. And occupational segregation is simply a piece that's standing in the way of that for Californians.
So let's talk about the inverse. What are some of the consequences of unequal representation in the workforce?
Well, one of, you know, potentially this jumps ahead a little bit, but the main issue here are those differences in wages that we see cropping up. So, for example, you know, among the top 10 jobs where white men are most overrepresented, all typically pay hourly wages above the statewide median, while those where men of color are most overrepresented typically pay hourly wages below the statewide median. So like even the top three jobs where white men are most overrepresented pay $35 an hour or more. And those top three where men of color are most overrepresented pay less than $20 an hour.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Tess Thorman from the Public Policy Institute of California about occupational segregation in some of California's most common jobs. And Tess, let's talk about those more common jobs. How common was occupational segregation in, say, the 10 most common occupations?
Absolutely. So one of the reasons that we even look at that is because, you know, we want to understand the scope of this in California, and it's very pronounced. We'd say occupational segregation is really prevalent in the labor market because of how frequently we see it, even in those 10 largest jobs. So some of these, I mean, maybe just the top five are managers in kind of a variety of fields, software developers, drivers, registered nurses, and retail sales supervisors. Even within those, a good example is that, you know, men make up just over half of the workforce, but among drivers and construction laborers, 95% of workers are men. Women are, you know, just under half the workforce, but they're three quarters of registered nurses, and elementary and middle school teachers. And these are among some of the most common jobs in California. So we see that this is really a major feature of the labor market.
And then you looked at other fields of work outside of the top ones that were also really demographically skewed. What were these jobs and how homogenous were they?
Yeah. So the other way to approach this is to say, for each demographic group, in what occupations are they most overrepresented? I think occupational segregation is often thought about in terms of gender. So it's a great place to start. Carpenters, automotive techs, plumbers, electricians, these are jobs that are almost entirely done by men. On the flip side, women make up almost all of preschool and kindergarten teachers, childcare workers, and executive secretaries. In terms of other demographic groups, it can be clearest when you look at a group that's already relatively large in the population. So, for example, more than 8 in 10 of some agricultural workers, of groundskeepers and landscapers, and construction laborers are Latino, compared to around 40% of all workers, and 3/4 of some agricultural workers and of maids and housekeepers are immigrants. It, I think, is a little bit less obvious when you look at race ethnic groups in California that are a little bit smaller, that they are still experiencing as much, if not more, overrepresentation, just because, you know, when Asian Pacific Islander workers make up 18% of workers in California, it's unlikely that you would see 100% of workers in a job be Asian Pacific Islander. However, you know, we do see high levels of overrepresentation. So 57% of software developers are Asian Pacific Islander. 5% of all workers are Black, but 24% of security guards are Black. This is also a feature for white workers in California. We're about 1/3 of workers, but more than 60% of producers and directors, of firefighters, and of CEOs.
So this is not just an issue of representation. Talk to me about the connection between occupational segregation and differences in wages.
You know, as I mentioned before, what we see is that wages are typically higher in, for example, jobs where that are most overrepresented for white men than in jobs that are typically most overrepresented for men of color. So we saw that those top jobs for overrepresentation for white men paid $35 an hour or more, among the top three, and the top three for overrepresentation for men of color paid less than $20 an hour. We see that also in terms of gender. And I mentioned that cross between race ethnicity because of how important it is in California. There is plenty of research showing that occupational segregation has been a feature of driving the gender wage gap, that men typically earn more than women. We don't necessarily see that so clearly when we look just at jobs that have a lot of overrepresentation for men versus for women in California, in part because our workforce is so racially diverse. You know, instead, we really have to look at how race and gender intersect. And so we do still see a gender wage gap when we compare wages for white men and white women. And then we see another gap between men of color and women of color. It just turns out that racial gap is really important in understanding what the gender wage gap looks like. So these are all kind of important features of understanding how occupational segregation has impacted wages in California.
So when you get really down into the data, because you're going granular on this stuff, what insights, you know, because a lot of us have heard about wage gaps between men and women and maybe, you know, people of color versus white people. But what jumps out at you when you kind of hone in?
I think that what jumps out to me is how important it is to do that overlay, where sometimes it seems like the story is that women are really overrepresented in a specific job, you know, among childcare workers. But the story is actually that women of color are really overrepresented among that job. I think that it really underscores how important it is to look at the intersection instead of trying to break this out into separate categories when that's not the main story.
So Tess, you're from the Public Policy Institute of California. Tell us more about the role of policy in addressing these inequalities. How can policy help create a more diverse workforce?
Yeah, policy has a couple of roles to play here, and it's really about both addressing occupational segregation, reducing it, and also reducing some of its impacts. And so the way that policy can go about doing that is to either really focus on the characteristics of jobs that workers already have, especially those who are in low-wage jobs, or focus on increasing the opportunities that workers have to choose a career and kind of move up within their careers. So California has kind of taken on that first strategy of focusing on characteristics by focusing on pay and benefits in low-wage jobs. And that's through things like the California Earned Income Tax Credit, which kind of boosts income for workers earning low wages, through the CalSAVERS Retirement Savings Program, which focuses on adding retirement savings options for those who don't have that through their employer, through increasing minimum wage, through expanding paid family leave. And then at the same time, the state, is making investments in job training, in education. An example of that, can be how the state is developing a master plan on career education, which really focuses on career pathways and kind of removing structural barriers within that.
So, can you tell us about where this trend line is going? Whether California is headed in a more diverse direction or less? And also, I'm curious, before we wrap, what kinds of jobs are the most diverse? Who's the farther on that diversity spectrum?
Yeah, we have only really looked at the most recent year of data, so I can't make a true projection of where California is going in this direction. I will say that Californians are very supportive of some of the policy areas that I was talking about. 81% of Californians support job training programs. This is from PPIC's November 2023 statewide survey. In the realm of kind of increasing opportunity, in the realm of supporting workers who are currently in low-wage jobs, 71% of Californians support expanding tax credits for low-income workers. 76% support increasing funding for childcare for low-income families. And can you remind me of your last question?
Sure. What kinds of jobs are the most diverse? Who's far along on that spectrum?
Yeah, we found that sales supervisors and compliance workers looked pretty similar to the overall workforce in terms of race ethnic composition, and managers, the state's largest job category, looked representative in terms of gender. I think part of the thing to take away from that is Californians, the reason that this is an issue is because of how it relates to wage disparity. So we maybe don't expect to ever see occupations all be perfectly representative by race ethnicity. There are so many that have real overrepresentation by race or by gender. There are clearly some that are not, that are a little bit closer to what we see statewide, but the underlying issue is how that ends up driving economic differences for families.
Tess, thank you very much for sharing your research with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tess Thorman is a researcher with the Public Policy Institute of California, PPIC. We've been talking about occupational segregation in California's workforce and how policy might be able to close these divides. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. We're back in just a moment.